Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Several Caribbean islands have been devastated by Hurricane Irma. Irma hit the region with its strongest power as a Category 5 hurricane with winds up to 185 miles per hour. Irma battered Cuba for 72 hours, and it lessened Irma's impact on Florida as a result. 10 people were killed thus far in Cuba. The island of Barbuda was basically destroyed, with 90% of its structures damaged or destroyed. Florida is today assessing the damage, in particular, the surge of water being the main problems in areas from Florida all the way up the coast to inland to Georgia. The U.S., France, the Netherlands, and the U.K. are all under fire for their limited response to the hurricane in their Caribbean territories. How is the region mobilizing itself? What role is Venezuela playing in the relief effort? Our guests are Dobreen Omard, who is based in Antigua, Francisco Perez Santana, the charge d'affaires of the Venezuelan Embassy in Barbados, Chamberlain Emmanuel, a member of the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States Commission, and Zohara Simmons, a resident of Gainesville, Florida. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
Aid rushed into hurricane-scarred Florida today. Residents began to dig out, and officials slowly pieced together the scope of Irma's vicious path of destruction across the peninsula. At least three deaths have been reported. Some glimmers of hope emerged from parts of the state forecasters once worried would be raised by the storm, as the damage wasn't as bad as predicted. However, the fate of the Florida Keys, where Irma rumbled through as a Category 4 storm, remained largely a question mark. Governor Rick Scott surveyed the region from the air and said recovery will take some time.
The way I think about it is we got to keep everybody safe. We've got to get our hospitals back open. We've got to get our fuel back here. We've got to get our roads open. We got to get everybody their electricity back, and I can't tell you anybody that's not working.
A Navy aircraft carrier was due to anchor off Key West to help in search and rescue efforts. Drinking water supplies in the Keys were cut off, fuel was running low, and all three hospitals in the island chain were shuttered. The governor described overturned mobile homes, washed ashore boats, and rampant flood damage. Some 13 million people, two-thirds of Floridians, are without power. President Trump will host Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak at the White House today. It's a meeting expected to focus on security issues while steering clear of a U.S. investigation into a Malaysian corruption scandal. The visit is important for Najib, who faces elections next year and wants to signal he is still in Washington's good graces despite a criminal probe by the U.S. Justice Department into a state fund called One Malaysia Development Berhad. Najib founded the fund, which is facing money laundering probes in at least six countries, including the U.S., Switzerland, and Singapore. He has denied any wrongdoing. The White House said it would not comment on the U.S. Department of Justice investigation. A commission created by President Trump to investigate his allegations of voter fraud is scheduled to meet in New Hampshire. The Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity has spurred controversy since it was established in May. Critics say the Republican president is using the commission to support his unsubstantiated claims of widespread voter fraud that cost him the popular vote during the 2016 election. Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach is vice chair of the commission. He told CNN that investigations into voter fraud should be a welcome thing.
We've presented to a U.S. District Court 128 cases of non-citizens who've gotten on the voter rolls, and we've presented lots of other evidence or who have attempted to get on the voter rolls. And I'm simply saying that in my state, we have discovered a problem, but no commission has ever looked at it from a nationwide perspective.
There have been isolated cases of voter fraud in the U.S., but there's no evidence of it being a widespread problem, as President Trump suggests. The New Hampshire chapters of the American Civil Liberties Union and the NAACP say they plan to call for the commission's dismantling. Today's meeting is the commission's second, but its first outside Washington, D.C. Mexico's top diplomat will be in Los Angeles today to close out a two-day visit to California. Mexico's Foreign Relations Secretary, Luis Videgaray, met with lawmakers and Governor Brown in Sacramento Monday. The trip to California comes at a critical time in relations between his country and the U.S. and amid uncertainty over the future of a program that protects roughly 800,000 young immigrants who are living in the United States from deportation, 200,000 of which live in California. In Los Angeles, Videgaray will announce support for those young immigrants. Alongside immigration uncertainties, Videgaray's visit comes as the Trump administration's efforts to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada got off to a rocky start. California Attorney General Javier Becerra announced Monday he's suing the Trump administration over his plan to rescind the Obama-era program that protects immigrants brought to the U.S. without authorization as children from deportation. The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program, is to be phased out after 6 months. Equifax is trying to clarify language about people's right to sue after a security breach at the credit rating service exposed 143 million people's personal information. The company said Monday that it has made other changes to address customer complaints. The company is trying to staff up its call centers more. It also now says people will get randomly generated PINs when they try to put a security freeze in place. People had complained about PINs being based on the time and date requests were made. Equifax also acknowledged that its right to sue language has been confusing at best. The company said enrolling in free credit monitoring doesn't preclude the right to sue. Some lawyers have already announced suits that they hope will be class action cases. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio. I'm Max Pringle.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. The Trump administration has come under criticism for a double standard in its response to Hurricane Irma, the response in Florida, as opposed to Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, both of whom are part of U.S. territories. In response, Trump has promised to visit the U.S. Virgin Islands in the next few days. The remnants of colonialism is visible in hurricane response in the Caribbean region. The UK has been criticized for its response to devastation in the British Virgin Islands, Anguilla, and the Turks and Caicos Islands, all of whom remain British territories. To stem the criticism, Conservative British Foreign Minister Boris Johnson, a Trump supporter, by the way, will visit the territory and promise to increase funding for relief. The UK sent a Navy ship and close to 500 troops to the islands that remain British territories and who were hit by the hurricane. Much is being made in the media about looting in the Caribbean islands hit, with the exception of Cuba. Both the Netherlands and France said they were increasing their military presence on their joint territory of Sint Maarten. The island was devastated, and food and water are running out. It is also clear that there is a clash of a class and economic privilege and poverty, with some residents in Sint Maarten seen taking televisions and other items that they could not ordinarily afford to buy. The King of the Netherlands has arrived in the region, and French President Macron is scheduled to arrive today. His government has also been criticized as having, as have all the other colonial powers, for doing little to assist. 37 people died during Hurricane Irma as it swept through the Caribbean last week. This, according to ABC News, and according to the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, as of Monday, the islands remain largely without electricity and other essential services, communication extremely difficult, and many parts of the Virgin Islands in particular are cut off from the rest of the world. According to The Guardian, wide areas of the British Virgin Islands have been reduced to rubble, with rats swarming through damaged houses and raw sewage, creating a health hazard. Let us go now to a clip from Valley Forge Network of the Prime Minister of Barbuda, the island that was devastated, talking about destruction there.
I have to admit that now the bearer of bad news, in that I journeyed to Barbuda this afternoon, and what I saw was heart-wrenching. I mean, absolutely devastating. In fact, I believe that on a per capita basis, the extent of the destruction in Barbuda is unprecedented. And it is unprecedented based on the type of storm. I mean, Hurricane Irma would have been easily the most powerful hurricane to have stormed through the Caribbean. And it is extremely unfortunate that Barbuda was right in its path. And what is instructive is that a difference of 30 to 50 miles involving a hurricane could make a major difference. Because whereas we may have had miles or wind strengths up to about 100 and probably 30 miles per hour, Barbuda evidently would have had 180, 185 miles per hour. And that has made a fundamental difference. From my observation, having done an aerial survey, I would say that about 95% of the properties would have suffered some level of damage. They would have lost at least a part of their roofs. Some have lost whole roofs. Some properties have been totally demolished. It is absolutely heart-wrenching. I mean, the infrastructure, the utilities infrastructure is damaged. The physical infrastructure was damaged. You'd recognize, too, that the island is literally underwater, and that in itself represents a serious threat in terms of mosquito-borne diseases, and we have to be very careful.
And here to discuss the region in the Caribbean hit by Irma, I'd like to welcome Dobreen Omard. Dobreen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and good day to you, to yourself, your guests, and certainly your listeners.
Yes, and Dobreen is a recognized cultural worker. He's recognized throughout the Caribbean region. He hails from Antigua and is best known as an author, playwright, director, and producer of theater and music. He's also a newspaper and magazine columnist. He's a speaker, a Calypso writer, judge, and analyst. So, Dobreen, you are based in Antigua, and the Antigua was not really hard hit. It didn't, certainly not with the fury as in other places, but certainly you have what happened in Barbuda, and of course there's a connection between Antigua and Barbuda. First, explain the connection.
Well, it's one country, two islands, one independent country. It's former British colony also.
Right. Okay. So Barbuda, unlike some of the other islands hit, really doesn't remain as a colonial territory in the way the U.S. Virgin Islands, you know, and the British territories, Turks, Caicos, et cetera. Is that right?
That's correct. That's totally correct. The island lies about 40 miles north of Antigua. We had estimated the population there to be between 1,600 to 1,800 persons on Barbuda. The situation now is that they have all been evacuated and are here in Antigua.
Okay. So Antigua then bearing that brunt. Now, How is it working, given the fact that even though there have been criticisms of France and the Netherlands, the UK and the US for a tepid response in their territories, but for Antigua and Barbuda, you are independent. So where then is aid coming from? Has aid arrived and from where?
Some aid has arrived rather immediately from Venezuela and also, interestingly, from Cuba. The other Caribbean countries, the heads of the other Caribbean CARICOM countries have met recently, yesterday and the day before. And some aid is already coming in from other Caribbean countries. As usual, however, I think friendly governments, including the United States government and the government of Great Britain, plus other European governments, will chip in and send some aid. But much of the sort of manpower for reconstruction in things like utilities, public spaces, etc., will come from other Caribbean countries.
Right. And so later in the hour, we're going to be talking to a representative from the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States and get a bit more detail about what they are doing. So in terms of response in the region, how the region is kind of mobilizing itself, is that mainly via CARICOM or are these just individual governments? Is it CARICOM as well as the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States?
Yeah, right. It's CARICOM as well as the OECS.
Right, and for our listeners, CARICOM, the English-speaking Caribbean governments have formed CARICOM, you know, working as a supportive unit for each other. So, Dobrin, what about Antigua, though? Because for people who may hail from that area living in the United States who may happen to hear this show, how did Irma impact Antigua specifically? We know that Antigua and Barbuda are one, right? Like Trinidad and Tobago are one nation. But for Antigua, what impact did you have there?
It was extremely, extremely slight. We have been through a decade, mid-90s to into the turn of the century, where I think we would have had 10 major hurricanes in that decade. And so Antigua tends to be fairly well prepared for hurricanes. Individual houses, you know, all the barring up and the purchasing and the medication control and water, etc. The population is fairly ready. We only suffered a glancing blow, fences down here and there, some utility posts down, not much major damage to houses, vegetation, certainly the trees took a beating. But the country is back to normal, except for that brief closure awaiting Hurricane Jose, which was predicted to have followed in the path of Irma. The country is back up. Airport certainly open. Power restored, I would think, now to about 98%
right.
of the population. Water is good. We are back up.
Yeah, so Antigua was spared. And do you think that with Barbuda, which basically was destroyed, as you said, all of the people of Barbuda have now been evacuated to your home island nation of Antigua. Do you think it had to do with the fierceness of the hurricane? You said Antigua seemed pretty prepared in terms of structures, et cetera. I mean, was Barbuda prepared in the same way? Is there a kind of a economic divide, perhaps, between Barbuda and Antigua? I mean, do you think that the fact that Barbuda was fundamentally totally destroyed had to do with the ferocity of the hurricane itself, or were there some other issues involved?
No, I think the ferocity of the hurricane, perhaps, contributed 90-95% to that. Had that hurricane passed over Antigua, I'm not too sure we'd be looking much different anyway.
I see. Mean,
construction to survive winds of 185 miles an hour, I think it's fairly difficult, rather difficult. There have been some comments that a number of the building codes in Barbuda were breached, that some houses were built without following national building codes. But I think that's minimum. I think, I mean, anybody facing that storm, unless you're built in steel, anybody facing that storm would have suffered similar damage.
Right, certainly, as Cuba did. And I know in my home island of Barbados, I mean, we are fortunate in that we're so easterly that we are, for most of the time, out of the loop of hurricane season. I think the last major hurricane to hit Barbados was Hurricane Jeanette back in 1955. But there's still a lot of structures in Barbados like the one I grew up in. I grew up in what's called a chattel house, which is, you know, the wooden house, whatnot. So even though since independence, there is a growing kind of middle class and more stone structures throughout the island of Barbados, there's still quite a lot of chattel house type structures. And certainly they would have gone, I mean, even in a category 3, much less a category 5. What about the structures in Antigua? Are we seeing more of a shift from the, you know, the earlier days of the wooden structures for the peasantry, so to speak, and the villagers to more solid structures?
Yeah, the structures are certainly a lot more solid now. We are witnessing a lot of expansion of the two main towns and expansion of the villages. And most of those expansions, new housing projects, etc., are fairly solid concrete structures. In Antigua, we have not yet gone, as in one or two other countries in the region, Anguilla, for instance, where there is a large increase in the number of concrete roofs on houses. So roofs are still, you know, galvanized iron or some of the new technologies. My sense is that they will go in 185 miles an hour in any way.
Oh, definitely. They'd be ripped off and causing damage to anybody in their path. Well, Dobrin, we are certainly happy that Antigua was spared the way it was, and Barbuda, our hearts certainly go out to all of those in Barbuda. I will ask our guest from the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States about what people should do in terms of relief, you know, that want to help independent nations like Antigua and Barbuda. I don't know if you have any suggestions in that direction, but if not,
well, a number of the expat communities here have, you know, already set up benefit trusts that people can forward monies to, etc. And certainly the Antigua and the Caribbean communities generally, in both the UK and the United States, are already at work. I think we will be expecting transfers, well, mainly transfers of cash. Really no crisis here with either food, water, fuel, medical supplies, anything of the sort. So it's going to be mainly cash.
And what about housing for the people coming in from Barbuda? Where are they being housed?
That's a very interesting question. There's still a number of them in 3 main sites, the stadium, the multipurpose center, and a national training agency that was vacant. But they are being slowly absorbed into the Antiguan population. That to me, it's really just logistical at this point in time. It won't be a question of space.
Right.
After the volcano in Munster, I think we actually accommodated over 3,000 Munstratans here in Antigua.
Yeah.
Fairly well accommodated within homes, etc. I mean, it's Barbuda, Antigua. It's one country. Lots of friends, lots of family relationships exist. And it's just to get that organized.
Right.
I think the challenge is. But, I mean, on the road yesterday, it was very clear that people were being absorbed into homes. Many people simply opened their doors.
That's wonderful.
Especially families with small children.
Right, that's wonderful. That kind of sense of community that still exists in parts of the Caribbean. Well, Dabreen, we are going to have to leave it there, but thank you for joining us, and we'll be checking in to see how things are progressing there. Thank you for joining us.
Margaret, thanks so much for having me.
All righty. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And next, we are going to focus a bit on Cuba, but not only on Cuba, but in terms of aid. You heard our guest say that fundamentally, Venezuela, as well as Cuba, were some of the first on the ground offering aid in the Caribbean region. But let us go now to a clip from City News about Hurricane Irma's impact on Cuba.
A small child wrapped in a blanket carried through a flooded street while a rescue boat is led through deep water. This as the hurricane brought fierce winds and heavy rain to Cuba's northern and western provinces. Local media reporting that Havana was hit by the highest storm surges ever, bringing flooding to neighborhoods that have never been plunged under seawater before. Giant waves reaching a frightening 8 to 11 meters high, gusts of more than 210 kilometers an hour damaging buildings, knocking down trees. Hard-hit areas like St. Martin, St. Martin, and Barbuda still dealing with widespread devastation. But there is some good news, though. Hurricane Jose is sparing parts of the Caribbean, where it was feared some areas could be slammed for a second time. The storm moved well north of Puerto Rico, a relief to residents there already dealing with flooding in Irma's wake.
We want to mention there are almost 3 months left to the Atlantic hurricane season. It wraps up in November.
Right. And again, what I'd like to do now is to welcome Francisco Perez Santana. He is the charge d'affaires of the Venezuelan embassy in Barbados. Francisco, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me to your program. And I am very happy because I'm here now and listening that not just there are media that the topic is not the hurricane Irma in Florida, but also in the Caribbean that we didn't hear, we didn't listen the media, so much about the hurricane Irma passing for the Caribbean and the result of the day after of the hurricane Irma in the Caribbean. So thank you very much for your program.
Right. Now, Francisco Perez Santana, in the United States, all we hear on the mainstream media about Venezuela is that it's a dictatorship repressing its citizens in deep economic crisis. We know that there is a deep economic crisis going on, but the dictatorship and repressing its citizens are highly questionable. I mean, it's with all of the elections that have happened in Venezuela, free and clear, that certainly, in my view, is a very unfair charge and image being put forward in the mainstream media. But we don't hear much at all about the humanitarian work that Venezuela does in the region. So I was not surprised to hear that Venezuela was the first with aid to Barbuda, which was so devastated in other places. Tell us, what is Venezuela doing for hurricane relief in the Caribbean region?
Yes, let me first start with your last sentence. The dictatorship in Venezuela is a very strange dictatorship that call election all the time. And now last Sunday, all the opposition party had a primary internal election to decide which are the candidate to participate in the next election that is for governor in Venezuela. That means that 23 state is going to choose who will be the governor in Venezuela. And last Sunday, they went to internal election to decide that. And after that, in 15th of October, we are going to have a new election, a governor election for the state. And it's very strange, dictatorship, that promote this kind of election. And it's very strange, a dictatorship, that promote the election of a new, to rewrite a new constituency. And it's very strange, a dictatorship, that was the first to send aid to our brother and sister from the Caribbean. It's very strange to hear that, no?
Strange indeed. Anyway, propaganda is more the name of it. Yeah, yes. But tell us then about your relief efforts in the Caribbean region.
Despite the situation, the economic, as you say, the crisis, the economic crisis, that is more a situation that we have for the economic blockade that we have, the government of United States, the government of Trump, push off to be in this situation with sanction, with the threat of military intervention against our people. Venezuela is always and will be always in solidarity with the people of the world, and more if it is humanitarian aid because the natural catastrophe. With the passage of Harvey in Texas, Venezuela was the first to send $5 million for help.
Wow.
In addition to the support that our company Citgo is doing with free oil and gasoline, and you need more. I don't know if in this epoch, in this period, you need the fuel for heating. They call it full heating. But we are giving through Citgo full heating and oil to the rescue person in Texas, through to Citgo, the company that Venezuela had in the United States.
Yeah.
Not just to United States, but also we was the first to send aid to Antigua. We sent an airplane with 10 tons of food, medicine, and some kit of first aid. We sent out another plane to pick water from Santa Lucia and send to Antigua. And also, we evacuate 400 of Barbudan from Barbuda to Antigua.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And yes.
Yeah.
And in an airport that nobody wanted to land, but our military air force could do that and evacuate the 400 people from Barbuda.
Right. And also, I wanted to say, I heard our earlier guest also said that Cuba was sending in aid. Just remarkable given how Cuba has been so devastated itself by Hurricane Irma, and remarkable for Venezuela given the deep economic crisis that's going on and all of the efforts to destabilize Venezuela by the United States and Western powers, that Venezuela nevertheless were, like Cuba, some of the first on the ground offering that kind of solidarity. We're running out of time, but just some final thoughts from you, Francisco Perez Santana.
Yeah, well, you know that the spirit of the revolution, the Cuban revolution, is to help and be with the people of the war. And we learned that with our commander Fidel, and also most with our commander Chavez. All the time, our commander Fidel sent aid, doctor, personnel to support the people of the war in any place of the war where they needed. The Cuban doctor were there helping people. And well, if we have a good teacher, we have to do the same.
Yeah,
our spirit is the spirit of solidarity also in Venezuela. And our President Maduro, that is a son of our Commander Chavez, start with the help, with the aid to this island, our brother and sister in the region, in the Caribbean, because we are part of the Caribbean. So also, yesterday we evacuated 50 persons from San Martin, and we sent 10 tons of aid also to San Martin. And today we are sending also to Cuba some aid with the airplane, the military airplane. So we need to understand that the people have to help the people, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes through the government, but the only reason for that is the spirit of solidarity.
Well, Francisco Perez Santana, charge d'affaires of the Venezuelan embassy in Barbados, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you
for your call. Thank you very much.
All righty. We are going to take a short station break. And coming up, Chamberlain Emmanuel, member of the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States Commission. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Fearless Drive Time Radio, Sojourner Truth with host Margaret Prescott.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. And you can subscribe for a free podcast anywhere in the nation, or indeed anywhere in the world. We would also like to welcome our SoundCloud listeners. Look for us on SoundCloud. We are available around the world. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And today we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners throughout the Caribbean region. And you can check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And if you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. And we are focusing on Hurricane Irma's impact, in particular on the Caribbean region. Zahara Simmons, resident of Gainesville, Florida, will be joining us to wrap up the show. But we're not getting a lot of news about what's going on in the Caribbean region. So hard hit St. Martin, Barbuda, Tortola, the British Virgin Islands, white areas reduced to rubble, a lot of neighborhoods flattened in Tortola, which is part of Virgin Islands, and Barbuda. We spoke about Barbuda earlier with Dobrin Omard, who is based in Antigua. And of course, Antigua and Barbuda make up one nation. The U.S. Virgin Islands, which is a U.S. Territory, we've seen some deaths there in Sint Maarten, which is half French, half Dutch territory, has just been devastated. Cuba has been devastated, 10 people dead. Cuba, of course, an independent nation. Puerto Rico, there were also some deaths in Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico being a U.S. Territory. And Haiti had at least one death. They weren't directly hit, but given Haiti being the most impoverished in the entire Americas, rainstorms will have implications for Haiti. I would now like to welcome our next guest, Chamberlain Emmanuel. Chamberlain Emmanuel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be on.
Okay. Chamberlain Emmanuel is a member of the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States Commission. He is the project manager for its European Union Global Climate Change Alliance project on climate change adaptation and sustainable land management in the Eastern Caribbean. He's the acting head of the Environmental Sustainability Center, where he oversees key programs such as climate change and disaster risk, biodiversity and ecosystems, land and water resources, sustainable energy, and more. He's also a civil engineer. There's a lot more I can say about you, Chamberlain Emmanuel, but I want to get on to the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States and what their response has been thus far to the so much devastation in the region.
Thank you. Well, we work very well. Just to start, really, our organization, the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, is a grouping of the smaller member states within the Caribbean. We currently have 10 member states, including 6 independent states, one of them being Antigua and Barbuda, which is affected, and other 3 or 4 other non-independent states, including Montserrat, including the BVI, and also Anguilla, the two of which were impacted heavily by the hurricane, and also including French-administered Martinique. So we've been working very closely along with the Caribbean Disaster and Emergency Management Agency, CDEMA. Most of our member states subscribe to the CDEMA framework for disaster coordination. So we've been working very closely with them, which includes international agencies such as the Red Cross, the UN, various UN bodies, etc. But also, based on our mandate as an organization, we've been reaching out to member states and trying to help them with some of the immediate needs and importantly, trying to mobilize assistance from friendly governments and other agencies for the immediate response and for future development. So this essentially is what we've been doing. Our Director General, our chairman, who is the Prime Minister of St. Lucia, has been very active, very hands-on. We have conducted a visit to the affected OECS states over the weekend, including the Prime Minister of Dominica also, and some other persons to really show solidarity, to get a hands-on, a first-hand view of the impact, to speak with the governments in there and to better understand exactly what their needs and priorities are to help us in our mobilizing in our coordination.
Right. For people who are just joining us, our guest is Chamberlain Emmanuel, member of the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States Commission. Chamberlain Emmanuel, what island nation are you based in?
I am based in St. Lucia.
In St. Lucia. Right. And just to let our Okay, our audience know that the member states of the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States include Antigua and Barbuda. We know Barbuda was hard hit, the Commonwealth of Dominica, Grenada, Montserrat, the Federation of St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, the British Virgin Islands, Anguilla and Martinique. Now, Chamberlain Emmanuel, you mentioned something about Montserrat. I've heard nothing about, was Montserrat hit?
Well, Montserrat, luckily, was not, impacted much based on the trajectory of the hurricane. So,
right.
They are basically, obviously, they would have gotten some feeder bands with rains and some wind, but not to the extent as Barbuda, Anguilla, Tortola, and the Turks and Caicos Islands, etc.
Right. And what about, are in terms of resources coming in, we know resources are limited. I mean, it's not like Florida, you know, and some of the territories that are still under colonial rule, basically.
Yeah.
So is support, you mentioned the Red Cross here. The Red Cross has been very controversial because of what happened following the earthquake in Haiti and also Katrina in New Orleans. But are you all also working with CARICOM? I mean, is support, because what you need is some hard dollars, right? I mean, some of these places have to, like Barbuda, have to be basically rebuilt from the bottom up. Chamberlain Emmanuel.
So essentially, there is a regional coordinating mechanism for disasters and emergency, and that is the Caribbean Disaster and Emergency Management Agency, better known as CDEMA. CDEMA, essentially, the membership of CDEMA constitutes most of the CARICOM member states, so which goes even beyond the OECS member states. So it includes even Jamaica, Haiti, Trinidad and Tobago, and the OECS member states who are membership to CARICOM. So CDEMA has been leading the charge in terms of coordinating the response, because in a disaster scenario, you need, very importantly, that coordination, finding out the damage on the ground and mobilizing the immediate rescues and also establishing what the needs are so that you can communicate that to your donor agencies, etc. So CDEMA has been leading that, and we have been also lending support and operating within that framework, but also, you know, lending our own capacity there in terms of, for example, mobilizing. We have been able to mobilize military aircraft, even from Venezuela, which has been able to come in and assist the evacuation from Barbuda, because Barbuda was essentially, you know, the housing stock was almost 100% destroyed. It was decided by the government of Antigua and Barbuda to relocate the residents into Antigua. But again, the issue of transportation. So we were able to assist.
Yeah, and Venezuela. Venezuela came
to bring them across.
Right, right. And let me ask you this, because we are out of time, but we are going to get back to you, Chamberlain Emmanuel, because we do want to continue to follow this story. But for our listeners who might want to support the regional efforts of CDEMA and others, is there something that they could do?
Yes. Well, they can, if they go to the CDEMA website, then they would be able to. There is a link there to how you can support.
Okay.
So that should be a first stop, and then they can also go to our website oecs.org, where we also post information on how they can support.
Okay.
So they can feel free to do that.
Right. Well, what we'll do is we'll post both of those websites on our social media, and hopefully some of our listeners will respond. But thank you so very much for joining us. We know that you all are so very busy right now, and we appreciate you taking the time, Mr. Chamberlain Emmanuel. Thank you.
Well, thank you also for showcasing our plight. Yeah.
All right. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And in the few minutes we have left, I'd like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth Gwendolyn Zohara Simmons, a longtime civil rights, human rights and peace advocate, member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, spent so many years in the South of voter registration, desegregation, etc. She is on the show today specifically because she is based in Gainesville, Florida. Zohara, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly clear, loud and clear.
Oh,
Right.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me on the show.
Right. And Zohar, I know you've been listening in on the Caribbean region. You might have a comment or two on that. But first, what are you hearing about the impact in Gainesville? Because you're central. That's central Florida, right? You're not on the coast?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we're north central. So we're above Orlando. There were problems. First of all, I did not sustain any damage to my home, but I live in a condominium complex, and trees fell on people's houses, and one is uninhabitable that I know of, and she lives right up the street from me. It just seems like you never know which way these trees in this city called Tree City. And we all love these trees, but boy, are they dangerous when there are high winds. And so I know we had at least a couple of other people who had damage to their homes. We did have flooding here in several areas of Gainesville that, to my knowledge, had never flooded before. A bit of the flooding was on the University of Florida's campus. And, of course, it has been closed and no classes through until Thursday. But one of the lakes that has just overflown is full of alligators. So, you know,
Uh-oh. That's
another kind of problem with alligators being all over the campus in that area. But main streets through the university, through the city, were flooded, and I saw coming home, because I left my own home for fear of these falling trees, but coming home, I saw that there were just standing water on either side of the main road. And, you know, if there had been more rain, I'm sure we would have been flooded in the complex in which I live. So we just dodged a bullet, as they say, but, you know, again, areas of the city that are low-lying, there was a lot of flooding. A lot of people had water in their homes. And so nobody, a number of people did not come away from this tremendous storm unscathed.
Right. And at least Newsweek is reporting that at least seven people in the U.S. have been killed thus far from what we know as a result of Hurricane Irma, six in Florida, one in Georgia. Meanwhile, 37 thus far of what we know about killed in the Caribbean, including 10 in Cuba. Of course, the death toll could rise. I mean, more than 70 people were found dead in Texas after Hurricane Harvey, for example. So I imagine in the next few days, we'll be hearing more about the impact on Florida. But a comment on you, because Cuba was battered for 72 hours. I mean, I lived through a hurricane in Barbados. I can't imagine 72 hours of being battered. And as a result of that battering, Hurricane Irma weakened by the time it hit Florida. So Florida really has got to be grateful to Cuba for lessening.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know, and you know, how many would we ever hear any officials or newscasters comment on that? And in spite of what they've gone through, the flooding and the being hammered, they have sent out, I believe I read, I may have the numbers wrong, but something like 700 doctors
Wow.
to other parts of the Caribbean
mm-hmm.
to help. I mean, Cuba is just so amazing. I so admire the Cuban people, and I admire so many aspects of their government. And I'm so glad you have focused on the Caribbean because, you know, all we can hear about in the United States is the United States, and it just gets on your last nerve that we hear so little unless you go to BBC or some other source to see pictures of what's happening. They did cover a little bit of Barbuda, but I'm so glad you covered it. I'm so glad you had officials from some of our Caribbean brothers and sisters nations speaking to us about what is happening to them and how we can help them. And I was very, very happy to hear from Venezuela because, as you noted, all we get are very negative stories about what's happening there. And in spite of their own difficulties, they were able to send relief help and planes and all of that. And it's so important for us to know this.
Yeah, and also the U.S. right now, focusing, I mean, even you're right about the focus on Florida, which is to be expected. But Puerto Rico is also, a U.S. territory, the U.S. Virgin
exactly.
Islands. And they're complaining about a double standard, really, in terms of U.S. response to what is happening on the mainland, to what's happening in the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. And now Trump is saying, well, he's going to go visit the U.S. Virgin Islands. But the reality is, for a lot of these colonial powers, France, the Netherlands, the U.K. and the U.S., it's a little late because the gig is up. People have seen the double standard.
Yes.
Final remark.
Very late.
Yeah.
It's very late.
Yeah.
And Puerto Rico, so many of their problems are due to the policies. And I'm sure that's true for the Virgin Island, but I've really been paying attention to the great difficulty in Puerto Rico, and it's definitely the result of U.S. policies against our brothers and sisters there.
Right. Well, Zahara Simmons, we are so glad that you are safe, and we always thank you for all of your work making some of the rights we take for granted and are yet again under threat today, your work with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Zahara Simmons, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. We are out of time. Today's show produced by Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, our intern, Sherelle Withers, our assistant producer, Stephanie Case, our engineer, Teddy Robinson. And we would like to thank Don Rojas, who coordinates the television program out of the University of the West Indies, for his help with today's show. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow with more coverage, including our ongoing series of campaigners for Black Lives. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.